respondidas por parte de un medio de informativo israelí cercano a los servicios de inteligencia israelíes, que afirma que oficiales egipcios y también de los Emiratos Árabes Unidos han visitado a la ciudad de Nimes y a las posiciones de las tropas norteamericanas y las unidades kurdas en preparación para el despliegue de tropas egipcias y de los Emiratos Árabes Unidos en esta zona para hacer frente a una posible invasión turca y también para combatir a los terroristas. Estas informaciones infundadas que no han sido confirmadas por parte de las autoridades sirias, realmente, según expertos consulados, lo que buscan es provocar una situación tensa entre Siria y los países árabes que comenzaron a restablecer relaciones diplomáticas con Damasco, sobre todo que el pasado jueves Emiratos Árabes Unidos reabrió su embajada en Damasco después de 6 años de cerrada y ha restablecido las relaciones diplomáticas con Siria. Lo que busca Israel, en primer lugar, es incrementar la tensión entre Siria y estos países árabes que ahora buscan reintegrar a Siria a la Liga Árabe, y en segundo lugar, estimular la idea vieja del presidente de Estados Unidos, Donald Trump, de sustituir a las tropas norteamericanas por otras árabes para formar un frente anti-iraní en Siria.
El secretario de Estado norteamericano, Mike Pompeo, deja claro que Washington planea usar al gigante sudamericano y su nuevo presidente Bolsonaro como soldado de batalla en el territorio de Abya Yala.
El secretario de Estado de los Estados Unidos, Mike Pompeo, ha calificado a Venezuela, también a Cuba y a Nicaragua de países que no comparten los valores democráticos. Así lo expresó la rueda de prensa conjunta con el futuro canciller de Brasil, con Ernesto Araújo, el tiempo que llamó a trabajar juntos contra los que denominó regímenes autoritarios.
Tenemos la oportunidad de trabajar juntos contra los regímenes autoritarios en el mundo. Hoy Brasil tiene un nuevo comienzo mientras se cumplen 60 años de represión en Cuba. Y también tenemos la oportunidad de hablar sobre amenaza proveniente de Venezuela y de nuestro profundo deseo de devolver la democracia al pueblo venezolano.
A su vez, la Cancillería venezolana en un comunicado rechazó las declaraciones de Pompeo, calificándolas de intervencionistas. Subrayan que el diplomático estadounidense llegó a América Latina para dar órdenes a los gobiernos subordinados a Washington. Denuncian la reiterada intromisión de la administración Trump en los asuntos internos del país latinoamericano. El nuevo presidente de Brasil también mantuvo un encuentro con el secretario de Estado norteamericano, en el cual ambos se comprometieron a reforzar la cooperación entre sus naciones. Esta jornada también se espera que Mike Pompeo visite Colombia para reunirse con su mandatario, con Iván Duque. En la agenda de la cita figuran los asuntos bilaterales, la situación en Venezuela y la lucha contra el narcotráfico, entre otros. La analista internacional en directo, Alejandra Loukau. Mike Pompeo, ya lo habrás escuchado, llamó al nuevo gobierno de Brasil pues a trabajar juntos directamente contra Cuba, Venezuela y Nicaragua. Te pregunto, Alejandra, ¿qué te parecen estas declaraciones?
Resulta paradójico que un gobierno como el de Estados Unidos, un país que propició golpes de Estado autoritarios en los años 60-70, y que además, por ejemplo, también apoyó el golpe de Estado también autoritario en Honduras en el año 2009, hable ahora de que está en contra de un gobierno supuestamente autoritario. También tenemos que recordar que Bolsonaro proviene de todo el sector militar golpista que participó del gobierno autoritario que vivió Brasil y que, por supuesto, se trató de una dictadura también apoyada por Estados Unidos. Y en realidad ahí se cae un poco la impostura, el discurso que quiere presentar Estados Unidos respecto a los países a los cuales no condena por su régimen autoritario, como ellos les llaman, sino más bien porque tienen políticas contrarias a los intereses de Estados Unidos.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RT, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
We are robots sent from outer space to replace the Devil Mix 3.
We are androids and we are strong.
101 Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's all my circuits pick up.
$500 reward to you for helping us find a new Free Radio studio location. We need something urgently. We are gone out of here on the 20th. Need about 200 square feet of location. We can build this little shack. We can use someone's shed. A closet, perhaps. We do need a bathroom. We need electricity. And we can wire that in as well. Again, $500 to the person that finds such a location. We need it for about a year. Contact us at frsc@freakradio.org. Online, freakradio.org, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And the $500 goes to you.
old school. You know I like that old school stuff. Don't forget, it's 60 minutes of funk, flavor, aight, funk flex. Big shout to my man Red Alert. Big shout to my man Chuck Chill Out. Old school's in effect for a second. Aight.
I came in the door, I said it before. I never let the mic magnetize me no more. But it's biting me, inviting me to rhyme. I can't hold it back, I'm looking for the line. Taking off my coat, clearing my throat. The rhyme will be kicking in till I hit my last note. My mind remains a fine, all kind of ideas. Self-esteem makes it seem like a thought took years to build. But still say a rhyme after the next one. Prepared, never scared, I'll just press one. And you know that I'm the soloist, so Eric, please be this. Get a girl and get soft and warm. Don't get excited, you've been invited to a quiet storm. But now it's out of hand, cause you told me you hate me. And then you asked, what have I done lately? First you said, all you want is love and affection. Let me be your angel and I'll be your protection. Take you out, buy you all kinds of things. I must have got you too hot and burned off your wings. Call the attitude, you need food to eat up. I'm scheming like I'm dreaming on the couch with my feet up. You scream, I'm lazy, you must be crazy. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me.
I want you.
Hey, Sonny, we're gonna have a real good fox chase tonight, boy. I just brought along my best two dogs, OK and P. Kate's about to fashion, but she's a little slow about opening up. How many dogs you bring with you?
I brought about eight with me.
Listen, I think somebody's up
trail. Your dog cannot run, man. You gotta hear one of my dogs right now.
Yeah, listen. $1 okay? We can give 10 cents for another life. But look at that baby, bro. Let's not run. Listen, may well sit down here and take a rest. Them dogs might run all night long. Listen. Come on, listen. Down the river bottom. This young baby's going. Listen, oh yeah, listen. Watch the cliff. Head to the cliff now. Running right in the cliff.
Semaphore from the washing line.
cold of the whispering chimneys and traffic signs. What's the message that's written under the face of clouds? Plans eternal, I know you know, so don't blurt out
And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz is the January 3rd, 2019 show, first show of the year, of Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobe Spear, Robert Norris, as I call myself. And this is a show that's going to be focusing on a number of things, but particularly on one particular person's concern about how she and her family are being treated in their RV and what HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Conscience and Action Group are talking about doing about it and even planning to raise the issue with the police department and other agencies, as well as to alert the community to the fact that there's some nasty stuff going on against folks whose only home is their vehicle. Stay tuned, listen, and if you are interested, join in and be supportive.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And let's jump right into it. The meeting on Wednesday, yesterday, that we had, kind of a combined meeting of Hufsters and Conscience and Action folks, two groups concerned with civil rights for the homeless. Huff will be meeting next Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 11, and the Wednesday after that, there'll be a meeting of Conscience and Action. We kind of alternate Wednesdays at 11 o'clock, but often many of the same folks come to these meetings. And the issues are mainly those involving poor people. And particularly for Conscience and Action, their concern is taking direct action to raise issues that are only talked about and often only mentioned in passing by bureaucrats and politicians, or ignored completely, or alternately abusive behaviors sanctioned and normalized by politicians and bureaucrats, such as the criminalization of people by shutting down bathrooms, the practices that arrest people for trying to go to sleep in parks at night. Yes, they aren't arresting people for specific violations of the camping ordinance or citing them that much anymore, but there is an escalation of trespass citations, where trespass means not going to somebody's property and refusing to leave and setting up whatever, but it means trying to fall asleep on either private property or public property. And the police are actually, doing their usual class patrols here, essentially saying, if you're poor, you have no right to sleep in Santa Cruz. Now, we can't go after you because of the Boise versus Martin decision, which is a decision that overthrew the Idaho anti-camping laws and the Idaho laws against disorderly conduct, as they like to put it, but that actually was targeting homeless people as finding ways of either controlling, containing, or evicting them from the area. So instead, they're using here in Santa Cruz these other laws. And that particularly impacts folks who are outside, but outside of vehicles, outside of homes, outside of structures. But it also impacts people who are in vehicles. It's been said, and I have said it many times on this station as well as elsewhere, that a poor person's only affordable housing in Santa Cruz and many other cities is a vehicle. People sleep in their vehicles. They park and they sleep there. They live there. They do their daily activities there. Some of them have self-contained bathrooms. Some of them use bathrooms as they can find them in the city. Some of them take a dump where they can because the city's closed all the bathrooms at night, except for, I guess it's now three porta potties, two on Cedar Street and one at Front and Laurel Streets. So at a Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, or perhaps it was a kind of a joint meeting of that group and Conscience in Action some weeks ago, a woman named Alicia showed up. I should say her flyer showed up. Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association came to the meeting and showed us a flyer that she had gotten off the Internet, off a Facebook page, which essentially described one family, in this case a woman who was the head of the family's response to harassment by people along Woodrow Street who are in their houses, presumably, while she was in her vehicle with her three children and her husband or lover, I'm not sure which, what their relationship is, trying to rest, and only doing so for very brief periods, in the sense that the vehicle did not set up a week-long campsite there. It simply was there for a night or two and was careful to follow, by her account, the 72-hour rule in Santa Cruz, which states that you can't be there for more than 72 hours, and also to stay outside the zones which have been industriously posted by NIMBY's buddies in the, I'm never sure it's the Planning, the Parks and Rec, or the Public Works Department, one of those three, the three P's. They pee all over the poor, I guess. That's one thing that they do. Or you see these signs at night that say you can only park here with permit parking for 2 hours, and you can't park at all during the hours of dark night, like midnight to 6 or thereabouts. And you'll find these signs in the so-called permit parking zones created originally by the still surviving council member of the right wing, sort of our local Trumpist, Cynthia Matthews. I know she wouldn't like to be called that, but I think that's how she treats homeless people and has throughout her career, pretty clearly, with a bias toward restricting them, if not running them out of town, and continuing and expanding criminalization laws in Santa Cruz. So you're going to hear this phone interview that I had with Alicia a couple of days ago. But we got this flyer, which apparently Cynthia Berger told us had been given, had been posted, which essentially showed, had been put on the van of Alicia, who then posted it on her Facebook page, which said something to the effect of, get out of the area. This is not a welcome area for RV campers. Sheriff Mills, or in this case, Police Chief Mills, here's the copy of the law that says it's illegal to sleep in a vehicle after 11 o'clock at night. Now, the people who are making up that flyer are a little behind the times. Not only did the September Boise versus Martin decision throw out that whole idea, whether it's at night or during the day, making it illegal for a homeless person to go to sleep or rest on the streets unless you have accommodations essentially for the entire homeless population of the community. You can assure them that they have real options. And Santa Cruz has never had that, doesn't intend to have that, though you hear lots of nice noises in that regard from endless planning sessions by the city, or I call them the shitty council in Santa Cruz. And I won't change that designation in spite of the new four progressives who've been elected until they seem to deserve it. So we'll see if they do. It would be nice if they do. But don't expect it necessarily. So this flyer had on the back of it, inaccurate as the flyer was in terms of the actual laws and practices, people have a perfect right to park their vehicles, and they even have a right to sleep in their vehicles these days, in spite of the misinformation being put on this flyer. But more important is the tone that tends to indicate a kind of hostility that Alicia found threatening and uncomfortable for herself, her children, and her family. In a way, this is kind of a reverse roundabout. What's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, when you usually have people in houses saying, oh, these people outside in their vans make me uncomfortable. I'm afraid to have my children walk past them. They could be criminals. They could be sex offenders. They could be drug users. Who knows what they are? That sort of thing. And of course, people who are in vehicles have even more vulnerability toward those who are in houses, because people who are in houses have a safe haven that they can retreat to. And they can do lots of shit and then go hide in private and, you know, be essentially free from the consequences, particularly if they're going after a targeted pariah group like homeless people in Santa Cruz. So Alicia's response was to write on the back of this flyer kind of a typed response. Reminder, any legally registered vehicle can park in public for up to 72 hours. Only after that is it considered stored and not legally parked. The recent Supreme Court ruling says that it's against the Constitution under Eighth Amendment, citing cruel and unusual punishment to ticket and or harass people sleeping in public places who have nowhere else to go. Harassment has always been illegal. I park less than 24 hours every single day, therefore touching of my RV in any way, shape, or form, including leaving notes and creeping around it at night, is in fact illegal. It will not be tolerated and could even be dangerous, as I've bought home safety equipment. Public service announcement to leave me and my family alone. I mean it. I don't bother anyone. I don't even park in front of houses. Don't make it a point of yours to bother me. It's not a great idea. I'm beyond annoyed that I work, am drug-free, a contributor to the community, and I get treated this way. And this was a flyer that we got back on December 11th, almost a month ago, at the Huff meeting, or the Joint Huff Conscience and Action meeting. And at the next meeting, we continued to discuss this and decided we wanted to do something about it. We thought we would perhaps distribute this flyer to folks at the Red Church, to folks on vehicles, to see what the general impression was, a general account was from people in their RVs, and also to let them know their rights to some extent. We were a little reluctant to do this to some extent because Huff and Conscience in Action are very limited groups. We can't pretend to have the legal resources to go after harassing housed groups such as Take Back Santa Cruz. I don't know if it's not fair for me to specifically single out Take Back Santa Cruz particularly, because I did not hear Alicia claim that it was a person with a Take Back Santa Cruz t-shirt who said, I'm from Take Back Santa Cruz. But as most people listening to these broadcasts know, the group Take Back Santa Cruz has been particularly concerned, though it often talks about targeting drug dealers and criminals. They're also concerned about the crime of camping and the crime of sleeping in a neighborhood and the crime of being a foreign element in a neighborhood who is poor outside and who knows what you could be. That's been my impression of Annalisa Cube's Take Back Santa Cruz group throughout the last decade, and of its representatives on city council, Lynn Robinson, Hillary Bryant, David Chirazes, Pamela Comstock, notoriously, who's an out-front member of, I think she's also a co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz. Not sure if I'm accurate there, but certainly a supporter. And, of course, Rochelle Naroyan. And, of course, Cynthia Matthews predates Take Back Santa Cruz, but has had that kind of genteel, privileged, property-owning mentality for decades and been a stalwart opposing the activities of the Red Church across from the property, the house that she owns next to Jack's Hamburgers on Lincoln Street. And she attempted to drive out the pastor of the Red Church because he was allowing homeless people to gather for different events on the church property. And if you want more details on Cynthia Matthews' behavior toward the church across the street from her property, there's a story, Cynthia Matthews, Scrooge for the Season, by Becky Johnson on Santa Cruz Indie Media from December 24th, 2010, the day before Christmas. And I'm tempted to do a long riff on Cynthia Matthews and this, her behavior back in 2010, 8 years ago, which, insofar as it impacts people in the Red Church, it may have changed, although the Red Church has grown increasingly conservative in its policies. The sextant, a guy named Steve, continues, perhaps to a lesser degree, although it's not too clear if this policy has really changed, of harassing and actually confronting people who attempt to leave with a plate of food from the church door. It kind of reminds me of the officer who drew a gun. I believe it was Officer Hernandez who drew a gun on a family that tried to walk outside with a plate of food from the Thanksgiving dinner in 2013 at the, I think it was the St. Vincent de Paul meal on Laurel Street. Probably I may have the name wrong of the charity involved. There's a long history of this kind of harassment of people. And again, getting back to the RV situation, Huff at the most recent meeting yesterday, along with Conscience in Action, took the lead to take a number of steps. One of them is to meet with Police Chief Andy Mills, or to attempt to meet with Police Chief Andy Mills, maybe with a council member or two in tow, along with Alicia, to essentially demand, or at least inform the chief, that one of his police officers, Lieutenant Joe Habe, was suspected of being the person banging on her vehicle in the wee hours of the morning, harassing her with notes, threatening her, and so forth. She believes it was him. And this is during the period of time when she is legally parked there at night with her family. And I will be inviting Joe Habe on the air to talk about this issue, why he feels, if this is an accurate account, if it isn't, to deny it. I think it's appropriate to give the opposing folks who, or at least those who are accused of these things, equal time. But in the meantime, my show is primarily concerned with giving a voice to those who don't have a voice, who don't have a badge and a gun and a bunch of, a nice, comfortable home to live in, who are simply trying to survive on the streets, either inside or outside of vehicles. So this meeting was proposed, maybe taking place. I think Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, as I call him, because he cracks a few nuts in the sense that he comes up against some hard characters He used to work with SPAN, co-founded the group called SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, 20 or 25 years ago with me, and we documented different instances of police abuse, not necessarily to any great avail, mind you, but at least we were doing it. Who knows? It may have had a deterrent effect. It may not have. We think it's important to do it. I still think it's an important thing to do. He is going to try to arrange that meeting. We'll see if Mills comes. Mills has also been invited to a demonstration that we are planning, tentatively scheduled for noon, maybe a little later. I'm thinking it. We want to allow people an opportunity to go to the various free meals, the free meal at Loudoun Nelson Center, and where they can actually use the bathroom, but only during mealtime, and only if they're an elder, and only if they're a member of the program. That hasn't changed, unfortunately. And, of course, the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, which also has Monday through Friday meals over there. It's at 205 Morris Street, for those of you who don't know where that is. It's kind of right behind the lumber yard on River Street as you head out of town. In any case, we, Conscience in Action and Huff, will be having essentially a public speak-out, which we've invited Chief Andy Mills, or at least he will be invited soon, as well as the rest of the community, as well as particularly people in RVs who are being harassed or hassled, or those who aren't, but have suggestions for how to camp. Survival sleep is really the way to put it. Survival sleep more reasonably and more comfortably in concert with the neighborhood that they happen to be in. How to move frequently so as not to alarm the horses, so to speak. That is to say, to alarm those who are prone to regard poor and homeless people in vehicles as a potential threat to their families or their bicycles in their yard or their property or that sort of thing. So this is going to be happening next Thursday, a week from today, in the afternoon. Is that tentatively slated it for noon? We're going to move it, I think, down to 1:30. Depends. We'll be putting out this information on a Facebook page and also on flyers that will be distributed at the Food Not Bombs meals, so people can be more aware of what the latest updated time of this press conference speak out is. And we don't necessarily expect a lot of people, but some of us are really concerned that this is happening to Alicia and others. And that really is going to be what you're going to be hearing after this brief musical break. You'll be hearing Alicia talking about this issue with me on the phone and talking about her experience and her history, so you can yourself judge whether this is an issue that should concern you, whether you should come to this protest, whether you should talk to people who are living in RVs and see how they're doing, see if they're experiencing the same kind of things, see if you should determine if your neighbors on the streets are treating people with respect or treating them rather like, insects to be eliminated or, stray dogs to be driven away or taken to the pound, whatever. So let's take a musical break, and then we'll listen to Alicia. That's Alicia Kuhl, her name is, by the way, K-U-H-L. She wasn't afraid to give her name. She wanted it out there, so I'm putting it out there.
Walking down that old lonesome road. Have you ever been walking down that old lonesome road? No place to go. Well, brown, no place to room and board. Things look so lonesome down that road ahead. Things look so dark down that road ahead. way you're living. Do well, boy, than what your mother said. When you ain't got a shadow over your head, things look so lonesome. When you ain't got a shadow over your head, when you could have been at home. Well, boy, sleeping in a feather bed. So road and lonesome, when you got to travel it all alone. So road and lonesome, when you got to travel it all alone. All you have, yeah, boy, she's dead and gone.
And that was Muddy Waters' Lonesome Road Blues. And now an interview with Alicia Cool.
So I'm on the line with Alicia Cool. It's about 12:30 on the 1st of January, 2019. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, Happy New Year.
I hope so for you, too, though the reason I'm calling you has to do with concerns that you've raised with a flyer that you put out in response to a flyer you've received as you've lived in your vehicle with your family, as I understand it. You have three kids?
Yeah, we do. We lost our house about 3 months ago. We had a home in the mountains, but it was red tagged, and our landlord refused to pay for relocation.
Wow. Did you attempt to get any satisfaction from the planning department, planning commission, sheriff, authority, anybody in the county?
I have. There's a code enforcement guy, Mr. Johnston, and he's been dealing with this same landlord for years. This guy's been getting away with it. He's been sued several times. I could take him to court and do the civil route, but a lot of people have done that, and he hasn't paid any judgments. So I'm just not sure that I would get compensated.
Name of the man?
What was that?
What was the name of the guy?
His name's Paul Carrick.
How do you spell it?
C-A-R-R-I-C-K. He's got probably about 30 lawsuits stemming from his property since, I think the county has been aware of his situation since 2004 or 2008. He has an order not to rent any property, any units on his property since October of 2013, and he's been doing it and profiting off of it since then. Without a problem. The county is supposed to demolish his units, but they're taking their time. So while they take their time, he still rents them out.
And does he did he advise you beforehand of any of his problems? When did you begin?
Oh, no. Nope. He had no problem collecting my first month's rent and my deposit and did not tell me that he had any problems with the county.
When did you move in?
We moved in May of 2016.
And what was the rent per month?
$1,000.
And for how many bedrooms are we talking?
Well, he claimed it was a two-bedroom, but it was more like kind of a one-bedroom. My friend called it a feed house. It's a house he built back in the 70s. It looked like a kind of a steeple, kind of, actually. It was like a three-story, one-bedroom house in the mountains.
Hmm. And what kind of problems did you encounter in that house?
Well, we had no water, no running water. He had it on some sort of well pump system, so the water wouldn't work a lot. We had no power. He had a solar system going on, but it wasn't working. He had a wind turbine that was supposed to create power when it was windy, but that actually caught on fire. So we had to put out a fire there. Thank God we were home. And those issues. We had to have a steady amount of wood to keep warm. So, I mean, I could see why the county did what they did, but I wasn't aware of this when I moved in.
Did someone else rent after you left?
I think so. I can't prove it, but I went back there once to collect my mail, and it looked like someone was moving in.
And what kind of problems did you encounter when moving out? And did you get your security deposit back, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, no. We moved out because the county is coming to demolish it, and we were told that because the county has no obligation to us because we're not, like, their tenant or anything, and we're not their plaintiff or defendant in the case or whatnot, that we wouldn't get any notice. That if they came to demolish, we would have seconds to get our belongings out, and that anything was left in the house, it would be demolished, so we had to move. But he didn't offer anything. He didn't give me any money back of the rent, no relocation. In fact, one of his tenants, they did come and demolish one of his tenants' houses, and he didn't even get them a motel room that night.
But they didn't come and demolish the property, huh?
No, not yet. They've demolished three units down below. It's kind of like a big hill with about eight units going up kind of a hill. His house and the house that I lived in resides on the top of the mountain. And I guess the county's working kind of from the bottom up. So they demolished three at the bottom and are working their way up.
And what's
including his own home. His house is illegal, too.
What's his response when you ask for relocation money?
That he's not doing anything illegal, that he's protected under the homesteader right, and that the county is in the wrong. So he doesn't owe me anything.
But he hasn't attempted to evict you.
No, he did attempt.
And did he get you out with this threat, or did he get you out with some legal process?
Well, he started the legal process of eviction. I won a demur because of some technicalities that he did. But then when I went to the second one, he filed another eviction. And when I went to that one, I lost that demur. And basically the judge told me that even though he's in contempt of court for renting the units at all, and that I was free to bring that up in the next trial when we go to trial for the eviction, but that ultimately I would be told that I have to move. He said, you can't continue to stay in a red-tagged place. So he basically told me in so many words that I would lose the eviction and that I would have a chance to recover in a different suit, but not that one. Like, I would be out. I would basically lose the eviction, and that I could sue my landlord, but I'd lose the eviction. And so I didn't take it that far. I left before he could actually get an eviction so that I wouldn't have my credit ruined.
Were you told that it was a red tag property when you rented the place?
When I rented it? Absolutely not. He never mentioned that. Hmm. I didn't find out until he started acting weird. I started having problems with the plumbing and the electricity, and I thought, gosh, he's really negligent. I wonder if he has a history of this. And I started looking him up, and I found out on my own.
Gotcha. Has he been doing this with other tenants in the same that you got to know when you were living there?
A couple of them.
And did they move out or did they stay?
They're in the process of moving out, but they're kind of in a situation, too, where it's just hard. Like, he has a veteran that's living in one of the houses kind of in the middle who's just distraught and stressed out every day because he has nowhere to go but knows that the county's going to come. So there are a few people of his tenants that are just kind of riding it out because they have nowhere else to go, but they know that it's temporary.
And some of the houses have already been demolished.
Huh? Yeah, three of them.
People you knew were forced out from those houses?
Yep.
So
the guy had to take his bike and put it in the back of his car and just leave. He only got to take a few of his possessions.
Wow. And to these people, do you think they left the county? You probably never heard from them after that, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know that guy personally. That happened, I want to say about 6 months into our living there, and so I didn't really know him, and he left before we could even talk to him. And that's another reason why I knew, because after I confronted the landlord about these issues when I found out, and he denied it, and then that's when I really had confirmation. A couple months after I confronted him, the county was there with tractors. So I was like, you know, you're lying to us. They're going to demolish these places.
At which point he said...
He said that he's got a lawsuit with the county and that the county owes him a couple million dollars and that what they're doing is wrong.
But he wasn't going to give you any relocation money. Gotcha.
Right.
So what you did was you bought a vehicle to move your family into.
Yep. I was hurt by a car accident a couple of years ago, and right about the time that this happened, my insurance money actually came through, and so I was forced to use the insurance money from my accident to buy an RV to live in.
And so you bought an RV, and then what was your next step?
We just moved into the RV.
And where did you generally park it?
We have had a couple different spots. We started out parking by Farrell's Donuts because it was lit up and really safe. But the people there were complaining. There's a lady that, and I do know this for a fact, there's a lady that has a AAA office right there across from Farrell's, and she started complaining about us. She even accused us of being drug dealers. But I had the cops come a couple of times and question us. They noticed that we weren't drug dealers and left us alone, but there's a lot of hostility over by Farrell's, and about, I want to say, 2 or 3 weeks into us parking there, what we were doing is parking by Farrell's at night and then parking it on Delaware during the day, and we were just kind of switching back and forth, and within a couple of weeks of that, they put those signs up, no parking midnight to 6 a.m.
This was in the last 3 months?
Yes.
Did you determine whether those signs were authorized by the city or whether they were done by, I don't know, the businesses or private residences?
They were done, well, I think that by the city, because the guys in the white trucks with the City of Santa Cruz label were out there making the X's before it happened as, like, for placement. And then the next thing you know, they were erecting signs. So I think it was the city. I think what's happening is that the city, even though we're not doing anything wrong, the city is basically appeasing citizen complaints by doing this.
And this began to happen mainly as a consequence of your vehicle or your vehicle and other vehicles?
Well, probably my vehicle and other vehicles. Right after I started parking there, a couple of other RVs kind of joined parking on that street.
Did you find...
And that's what I've noticed, too. I've tried to avoid parking by other people because I don't want them to think we're like a brigade.
Did you form any kind of connections with them while you were parking near them? Did you, in other words, you meet them, converse with them, exchange information in any way?
No, I try to avoid talking to people because I just get nervous and I don't know.
You talk pretty well, so.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. So Farrell said, or was it the Farrell's management? It was a AAA woman who said that.
It was a AAA woman that was saying that about us, but Farrell's actually is the one that told us it was her. The people who own Farrell's are very nice. They never gave us a problem. They were always welcoming, and they actually told us, you know, that lady that has the AAA office, she's the one been calling on you guys. She said the guys are drug dealers, and she was over here complaining about you guys. I just thought you guys should know that it was her and try to avoid her.
Does Farrell's have a parking lot or just street parking?
Parking lot, and then there's street parking right in front of it.
Did you ever ask them for permission to park there during the night?
No, because there's another gentleman that they let park there. He kind of oversees a lot, and I didn't want to...
Step on his toes?
Ask for too much. Yeah, I figured that's kind of already his place.
There is a, it's no longer, the sleeping ban no longer applies, as you probably know, because of the decision, the Martin v. Boise decision. But, and there still is actually an explicit exception. If a business can give up to two vehicles permission to park in their lot, if they want to, so.
I didn't know that.
It's true. It's under it's a section of the Municipal Code 6.36, I think it's either 020 or 030, something like that. But it doesn't matter if they want to harass you. Do you think this guy was? Did you ever get any sense that the fellow who was parked in the Farrell's lot was getting harassed?
No, because they let him park there. So I think that everyone knows he has permission, so they don't bother him.
So you might consider negotiating with. if you ever decide to, you know, abandon Woodrow for whatever reason, because I guess that's, is it fair for me to say, do you want me to mention that's where you're parking now or not?
Yeah, that's fine.
So what happened after Farrell's? What happened next?
Well, I also parked at the Christian Life Center a couple of times, which is the church that's on Mission. But I got woken up early by a cop who, and I think it's because the dental office right there didn't want us parking in the church parking lot. And so after they put up the signs at Farrell's, then I started trying to find other safe locations, and I started parking behind Valero on Mission. And that was really bad. One night at... what was it? 1 o'clock in the morning, there was a banging on our RV. Bam, 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 yelling and screaming, get out! Get the F out right now! And it scared me to death. I woke up, I went outside, I was like, what is going on? And there was a drunk guy walking down the street, screaming, who actually lives in the cul-de-sac that is right there behind Valero. And this was a big thing. I actually walked, I saw where he lived, so I called the police, and I told the cops what he did to us, and the cop was really rude. He asked me if our RV wanted to make a complaint. But nothing actually, no crime had been committed to us, so I was like, okay, fine. And I woke up the next morning, and I researched who the guy was. I looked up his address and I cross-referenced. I'm a pretty good, like, researcher. I cross-referenced and I found out that his name, and I don't know if you want me to say it, or you could edit it out, but his name is Jason Burdick. And I cross-referenced Google Jason Burdick, and I found out that Jason and Roxanne Burdick own a hair salon here in town. It's called Stranded Hair Salon. So I called and I left a message on his hair salon phone number, and I said, Jason, I know that it was you last night. I cross-referenced your address, and I don't want you to ever come near my RV again, or I will do a restraining order against you. There is a family in there. You scared my kids to death. You know, how dare you harass homeless people in the middle of the night like that? That's just crazy. And then I posted it on the Santa Cruz community page, what he did to us. And so a lot of people started giving him, like, bad feedback and on his, like, business page and stuff like that. So he called me and apologized, said that he's so sorry. He didn't know there were kids in the RV. He's had some issues and that with drug dealers and stuff like that. And I explained to him that that's not us. I feel for those issues. I really do, because I have compassion for those issues. Those are the same issues that make us look bad when we're not that type of people. And, but I told him, you can't go around vigilanting and scaring people like that.
And back to Alicia's interview in a moment, but first this break.
paying. Rent, forget about crashing on couches and sleeping in tents. I'm tired of feeling like I'm always so far away from home. I'm ready to make the world my own. In my dream, I'll hit the road and drive to the sea.
That's a song by Daryl London, and I think it's called the RV song Live Off the Floor, according to YouTube's titling of it. Of course, it's not as easy as that, living in an RV. Often it's, as Alicia Cole talks about it, emergency housing, when you haven't got the option to live in a solid house or even rent a solid house. And now back to Alicia's account.
It's not okay and it's not safe. And he apologized, so I took down the harsh things that I said about him. But I never park over there anymore because he scared me. And that's when I've come to Woodrow.
Now, he actually acknowledged that it was him who banged on your vehicle.
Yes.
And the name of the cop who came to your and refused to take a complaint that night...
I'm not even sure. There was two of them.
Gotcha.
And they were so rude, and it was like the middle of the night that I didn't pressure them for, like, fair info. But I did call the sergeant and make a complaint.
Name of the sergeant?
I also don't remember.
No problem.
He did call me back, and I told him I didn't appreciate how they handled it. And he basically kind of justified their behavior and said that, you know, no crime was actually committed. What do I want them to do and stuff like that? And I just told him that I felt like that's, you know, a bunch of BS, that there were several crimes being committed.
Disturbing the peace at the very least, sure.
The guy was drunk. He threatened us. I said, if that was me, I would have gotten arrested.
Yeah. So you then moved to Woodrow, and what happened there?
And after being at Woodrow for a couple of days, I got that really rude note on my windshield wipers.
Describe it.
It was like a handwritten letter duct taped to my window that said, and I have to remember exactly, something like, we... in the Woodrow, I have a picture of it, but we in the Woodrow area do not condone long-term RV campers. Our street is not an RV camping facility. Don't overstay your welcome.
And then it was somewhat nastier below, as I remember. This is a flyer which Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association, I guess it's called Power Surge Tenants Rights now, brought to the Huff meeting, the group I work with, and it had this sort of, you know, penciled, or I should say, inked over the another flyer, which was an even nastier flyer, rather harsher flyer. That, you know, it's not just we don't have facilities in our neighborhood. It's sort of, it didn't quite say get the fuck out, but it kind of moved in that direction. You know.
Yeah, it was written on the back of a flyer that said that it was approved by Andy Mills, and then it was all these like. Typed out things about like camping ordinances and it's illegal to park like this and it's illegal to do that, but it was all BS too because it doesn't apply to us. We weren't doing any of those things. We're technically not even campers.
Well, there is a law in Santa Cruz which makes it illegal to sleep in your vehicle between the hours of 11 and 8:30. However, as I mentioned earlier, and as many listeners to this and previous broadcast knows, that essentially was thrown out by the Ninth Circuit Court in September throughout the Ninth Circuit District, which includes California. Not our law, but a similar law in Boise, Idaho. And also Mills, the police chief, has not been enforcing the camping ordinance generally, although he's been enforcing other similar ordinances for the last year and a half. So it's peculiar. I mean, it's inaccurate of them to have put this on a flyer and posted it on your vehicle, which you say began parking in Woodrow only a few months ago, right?
Oh, yeah, we've been at Woodrow, we've only been for maybe not even a month, probably about a month total here and there, because we were parking at the other locations prior.
How old are your kids?
And when I got that letter, I had only been parking on Woodrow, maybe this is like the third time that I'd ever parked on Woodrow, and I already got that letter.
I see. And how old are your kids?
I have a 5-year-old daughter, a 2-year-old daughter, and a 1-year-old son.
Wow. Okay. So, you got your hands full there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So on Woodrow, you got this flyer, and what was your reaction to it?
At first I was really irritated that they duct taped it to the window and that they were creeping around at night, because I stayed up late that night. I can't remember what I was doing, something already with my daughter, but I stayed up late almost till midnight. And when I woke up, it was like my kids get up really early every morning, about 5 a.m. And when I woke up, it was already there. So my first thought was somebody was creeping around at night. Mm-hmm. And my second thought was how rude. And then I wrote a response, a nasty, I wouldn't say super nasty, but kind of a rude response on the back of it. And I put it on the poll so that whoever wrote it would get that response back to them.
Did you get any reaction from any of the neighbors, or was that, did you get any indication that anyone had read your response?
It stayed on the poll for like 3 days and then it was gone.
Did you say 3 days or 30 days?
3.
Okay. So, did you make any attempt to communicate? Did you park continuously for 48 hours at any one spot and then move and then come back? You said you did this 3 times, right?
Yeah, basically I'll park like maybe like a night, and then I'll leave for like a couple of nights and park somewhere else, and then I'll come back for a night.
So, now here's a question which Take Back Santa Cruz might find relevant, but I'll ask it anyway. How do you deal with wastes in your vehicle? How do you deal with those kinds of problems?
That's a good question, and that was one other thing that one of the AAA lady had accused us of doing, which I guess maybe somebody else has done. I don't know. But I had no problem pulling out my New Brighton dump slip. I dump my RV approximately once every 2 weeks at best, because that's about all we can take it to before it's full, at New Brighton for $10. So I guess they have a problem with that around here, but that's not something that I would ever do. We dump ours legitimately the way that you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. So what's been happening? So when you leave Woodrow, you go to other places, or are there regular spots you go to? You don't have to say where they are if you don't want to, but how does that work?
Well, there's a couple places. There's limited places now that don't have those signs, or something that says permit, or something that says no midnight to 6 a.m. So basically I'll park like one night here, one night there. Like today, I literally am out of gas until tomorrow, but I've only been in the spot that I'm at since last night. So that would be like the 48-hour mark. Tomorrow, when I get paid in the morning, I plan on leaving, so that would be like the 48-hour mark. So that's basically what I do, is just I just make sure that I don't stay 72 hours anywhere, because I don't want to make anybody mad. But even though I do that, I'm still getting, like, so much harassment. It's just almost unbelievable. And some people might not consider it that, but I do. When I've got people creeping around, I've got all this chalk. I've got, like, a kindergartner's chalk design on my tire. I got duct tape residue on my window. You know, people notice, I've got people like, oh, I've noticed you park here a few times, and they just want to introduce themselves. I'm just like, you know, I'm just an ordinary person in a parked vehicle just like everybody else. I don't see you walking up to the truck across the street and being like, hey, I've seen you park here a couple times. Who are you? I just kind of feel violated.
Have you said this to anyone?
I, like, as you can see, I'm outspoken, and, like, if I start to say how I really feel, I could hurt somebody's feelings or get upset. I don't want to scare anybody by, you know, being harsh with them. For the most part, I don't say anything to anybody. I'm really polite, and I answer their questions, and I try to avoid them.
I mean, what you might also ask, if somebody asks you that question, is say, where do you live?
The guy today said his name was Danny, and he lived down the street and around the corner. But it's like, you know, okay, I've seen some people today ride their bike next to me. I've seen that same couple at least 3 times. I don't feel the need to chase them down and ask who they are.
Well, I mean, in other words, one counter gambit, and it isn't even being rude, it's kind of being strategic in a way, is to say, oh, you know, where do you live around here? Are you a local resident? How long have you been here? And where's your house? Got a big yard? You know, I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, he wouldn't tell me, though, because I guess,
but then,
you know.
See, that might discourage him from talking to you, which is, and you're not being rude, you're just being very chatty. Oh, yeah, interesting. Have you lived here long?
I just feel bad. My spirit's kind of disintegrating, too, because 3 months ago I was a house person. I didn't have to deal with any of this, and I feel like now all of a sudden I'm being treated badly by everyone.
No, you know, I hear you. So, any positive experiences camped on the, I should say, sleeping in a vehicle on the street?
Only the people that have reached out to me and said, thanks for sharing your story. What's happening to you is not okay. You know, we need to not group all homeless people in the same bracket. Different people need different services. We need affordable housing. I like Gloria. Those connections have been the only positive experience.
You attempted to talk to, God help me for saying it, any city council members about this?
No, because I'm like new in all of this, and like I don't know who to trust, who might make my situation worse, you know, that kind of thing.
And you are, after some reflection, you've decided to, A, go public with this in this broadcast, or I should say this streamcast, since we're not broadcasting.
And at this point, the power in my recording device ran out. But Alicia did come to the Conscience in Action meeting the next day, yesterday, actually, and spoke to us at length. And we decided to hold a press conference a week from today at the police station, inviting Chief Andy Mills and the community and RV people and even council members, if they want, to come and essentially to reiterate that it is legal to be in your vehicle, sleep in your vehicle, live in your vehicle, eat in your vehicle, crap in your vehicle, whatever you need to do in your vehicle, for up to 72 hours in any particular place, provided the Cynthia Matthews plague of permit parking signs hasn't spread, which essentially are homeless bans that also, unfortunately, have reached some really epic proportions in some the strangest of places. As I've mentioned before in other broadcasts, the first place that 24-hour bans on anybody without a permit for parking in that area started at Fern, Limekiln, and Coral Streets near the homeless lack of services center there, and were engineered by Ken Deeg, who's a police officer who went around from business to business getting people to sign up to create this 24-hour ban. The ban then spread to neighborhoods near Loudoun Nelson, and I'm not sure how much further it spread. Probably should do some research into that. Maybe I will if I get the energy and initiative to do it, or perhaps the resources. A lot of us want to do more to understand what's going on, but we don't have the person power. If you're interested, get in touch with us on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-4833 or 423-HUFF. Whether you're indoors or outdoors, if you're concerned about this issue, because as those who are fighting for tenants' rights have said numerous times, even at recent city council meetings, those who are tenants in Santa Cruz are frequently at the risk of becoming homeless because of the regular and obscene escalation of rents and the power of the landlord lobby. So get in touch if you want to fight this. We're, of course, looking for a tenant-landlord coalition might be bad too, but a tenant RV homeless coalition. Essentially, of people who are either displaced or likely to be displaced, and who are fighting simply to maintain a semblance of dignity and safety in their lives in a city that is rapidly gentrifying. So, at the meeting yesterday of Huff and Conscience in Action, there were a number of people who came in and out. It was actually quite a quite a large number of people kind of who cycled through the meeting. One of them was Santa Cruz Tenants Association activist Cynthia Berger, who I have corralled onto the phone. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi.
And Cynthia, what did you make of the meeting yesterday and what you've learned about the situation of people in RVs? I know that hasn't been your main beat. You are, you know, primarily concerned with tenants and rent profiteering and getting people together to establish a base for fighting that, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I was working on the rent control campaign, and I also run a hotline if tenants want to know what their rights are, which is 831-222-0359.
Say it again.
And 831-222-0359. And you can find it online if you Google Santa Cruz Tenants or Tenants Rights Santa Cruz. And there's a website with the phone number and email, santacruztenants@gmail.com. So, but over the past few years, as I've just been educating myself by talking to a lot of people and activists and politicians and everything, realizing there's really, having separate groups is going to be ineffective, I think. And so I'm working more towards getting to know and participate in a variety of groups that are doing basically, it's sort of like the Poor People's Campaign. I mean, it's not the campaign itself, but there's a lot of poor people, a lot of more poor people in the United States that are, that need to get together if they want things to change because they have a lack of power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, the broader analysis. So I'm wanting to work more across groups. People use this word intersectionality. I can't stand jargon, so obviously I'm going to use my own words. But I think it's important for tenant activists to, you know, take a new look at the current landscape for renters and understand that many renters become homeless and many homeless people, you know, cycle in and out of being renters. And it's kind of, you know, there's a lot of artificial division, and a lot of it's based on the class people think that they are. You know, but when you really look at the reality, tenants and homeless people, they're everybody that isn't a property owner. And they are, we are affected by the fact that all the laws favor hugely property owners and property ownership. You know,
talk a little bit about that. Cynthia, talk a little bit about that.
I'm more with tenants and homeless people, if you want me to put it in, like, first-grade terms.
Yeah, what you talk about the laws favoring property owners. Any more particulars about how this impacts Santa Cruz?
Well, Santa Cruz... What do you mean?
Well,
what impacts Santa Cruz?
Well, we have a majority of renters in Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah, but Santa Cruz, like almost one in every three people living in Santa Cruz is a student at UCSC or a staff member. So there's probably about, you know, there's about 18,000 students. Some of them rent on campus. Some of them rent downtown. And then there's probably, I don't know how many thousands of staff members, but it's one of the biggest employers, you know, in the city, if not the biggest one. So not everybody lives in the city, but it impacts, you know, there are always going to be a lot of renters in Santa Cruz because it's a UC town, and it's not a big one. It's not a big city, so it has a high percentage of renters, you know. And I don't know if it's always been that way historically, but it's been a place where there have been speculators ever since the 1970s when the campus started growing and stuff. So there, you know, it's a place that has invited property speculation. There haven't been a... Anyway, it's kind of complicated, so I don't really want to talk about it. Something that's so complicated that it distracts me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I ask that is...
Was it asked me the question again?
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure... you know, we've had this recent, the end of the rent freeze, the end of the just eviction protection, and supposedly a new city council coming... Well, it is a new city council coming in with its first meeting next Tuesday on the 8th of January. And you've been a hard worker for a rent control and just eviction protection and also tenant organizing. But you've also, as you've spoken to me about it, felt rather frustrated, both to some extent with the organizational situation of the organizations involved, but more important, the difficulty of getting tenants to perhaps because of intimidation, perhaps because...
Well, you know, it's because there's a rapidly changing... There's a lot of rapidly changing parts to our society right now that are all related, and I don't like to look at things separate. And so, you know, that's like my genius and my pitfall. But, you know, so there are these analyses that people are depending on that are from a different time, with before there was global warming and, you know, all kinds of things that are related, and before, you know, there was a depression in 2008, you know. And so I'm just thinking that the overlays, these analyses are out of touch and out of date. So that doesn't really frustrate me. I just don't buy them. I always try to look at what, you know, what people say with fresh eyes. So that means, therefore, the received wisdom that I got for a number of years was that, oh, well, you've got to organize tenants in your own area, and, you know, you should do it through a tenant union. But as I look around on the Internet, I see hardly any tenant union websites, and any that are there have been out of date for years. And so there's this idea that never worked about you've got to have tenant unions. And I feel like there should be more than one idea about what to do about renters and home, you know, non-property owners.
What's your
needs to be a bigger, wider analysis.
What's your idea, Cynthia? That you think, or at least what?
Well, just a real basic one, which this is why when I first started, you know, researching this, I decided to volunteer with an organization, and I chose Tenants Together because they had they presented themselves as a statewide tenant organization. I hadn't seen anything like that in any other state. Everything was based on large cities. So I thought, okay, I'm going to work with them, and what they, you know, what they're a tiny little organization, so, but they were concentrating on tenant organizing, but also writing legislation, trying to get legislation passed, you know, on behalf of renters. So I came from that. It was my idea, and then they were doing it, so I tried to work with like-minded people. So right now what I think, after observing for the past few years, I think there should be a statewide one organization, California Tenants Union. You know, if little activists want to go around and try to learn how to be an activist, that's fine. But I think what we need is skilled organizers, you know, who know what they're doing, who have a proven track record. And the reason we need a statewide organization rather than a balkanized Santa Cruz Tenants Union, Monterey Tenants Union, Hollister Tenants Union, is, well, A, that just doesn't work and never has. But B, tenants are moving around all the time, so they don't have like a geographic loyalty anymore because they can't. They don't own property, and they're pushed out for a higher rate because there's so much competition, you know, so they're evicted by rent raise, and then they have to move along. And so I think there needs to be constantly a place where they can go everywhere that has a familiar feel to it, just like people go to Alcoholics Anonymous all around the country. They kind of know what to expect when they go to a meeting. And I, you know, it just makes it a little easier if you're handed, you don't have to start from scratch, you know, and you have a larger group that you can tap into for resources. Large cities have many more human resources, and I'm talking about if you have a 500,000 people, there's going to be a tiny percentage of them who are tenant organizers, and that tiny percent is going to be a whole lot more than in a city the size of Santa Cruz, say, or a smaller city. You know, we might have 3, and they might have 10. You know, so there's this, like, kind of scale that needs to be addressed. And another issue that I think that a California tenants union could do is, you know, why it would be good is there needs to be education. There needs to be a lot of education for people who don't own property so that they can understand how much of a second-class citizen they are, you know, and that hopefully then people will decide that you don't have to call it tenant organizing. You can call it, you know, whatever. You can work with other people, too, but you need to get your rights back as a human being. You know, it's like, you know, the main issue that I think is complementary to tenant organizing is organizing for much higher wages.
Let me also ask you, Cynthia, because one of the reasons you came to the Huff meeting was you felt there needed to be a kind of a joint meeting, coalition, mutual support by homeless folks, homeless organizations, and tenant organizations.
Yeah, I don't know why people break themselves up into, you know, ideologically different groups or something. I mean, if you're dealing with housing and you're poor and you're not a property owner, I think you should all be in the same meeting, and maybe you can have a committee over here and a committee over there. But all this, you know, you don't know what's going on in this, like, move for housing justice. They're having a meeting tonight, in fact, you know, but you're not going to it. You know, people from the homeless organizing they haven't been, like, invited to it exactly, you know. So they're having their first meeting after the rent control campaign tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, it's just, there needs to be more diversity and cross-pollination in these activist groups, and people need to work together and give up their little ego about there being a big fish in a small pond in Santa Cruz. I see that all the time. And, you know, just really try to look at the bigger picture and where you fit in the whole state, and I don't know.
Well, one of the issues we talked about...
I'm not like a public speaker that articulates my stuff like Gavin Newsom or something.
One of the things Cynthia, one of the things we talked about at the meeting, in fact, one of the main subjects was, again, focusing on RVs and RV dwellers, and particularly Alicia, whose case you brought to us a couple weeks ago, and actually sort of trying to hold the police department accountable for, reining in renegade officers who are apparently, if Alicia's account is to be credited, banging on her vehicle late at night. And also, I've heard sort of other stories, but not so much recently, and not in a very well coordinated fashion that I actually have, you know, meticulously documented. But the concern that you have a 72-hour law in Santa Cruz that says you can park on any public street, provided there's not a permit parking ban sign sitting there, for up to 72 hours. But that isn't being respected either by police or by enforcement authorities or by residents who are calling police. And we, of course, thought about creating this event next Thursday, a public event at the police department to invite the police chief to remind the community that the 72-hour law is a law, that the Boise versus Martin decision, which says you don't arrest people for sleeping or survival behavior of resting if you haven't got any kind of facilities for them. That's just the reality. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think I don't really understand the city of Santa Cruz. It seems to be like a few old hippies that like homeless people and a bunch of new gentrified and then a bunch of rich people and then students that are like into science. So I don't really, like, can it work together as a city? Can there be, like, who are you talking to when you have these kinds of meetings? I mean, you know, who is it that you want support from? Is it just you versus the police? Or is it, you know, where are the people here in the city? I think, you know, I don't have a good feel for what people want and believe in this city because it's changed so fast. Well, it's changed over time. But, standing up there and I don't know, I'm not an activist like that really. I don't know what good is that going to do to stand up there and have a meeting there. So you have to explain that to me again, you know, have some kind of meeting that who's going to even go to it, who's going to know about it. Is that the most effective thing to do? I mean, I don't know. What's effective? I mean, what is the effect you're trying to have? What I'm saying is that there are a lot of people pressuring the police to do exactly what you don't want them to do. So the thing is that don't you want to get more people on your side who feel the way you do to come out to that?
Sure.
Then you know, and to contact the police, like, not just a small group of people who do it all the time, every time, because that's what they do, but, you know, get new people in, like, somehow, and I don't even know how, it's not my forte, but we used to have a newspaper, you know, we don't really have that, but, you know, just regular citizens pull them in. I mean, you pull in students, but who are the regular citizens? Are they people who spend, they're either old people who now are wealthy because they own a house, an old house here, or are they people who have moved, you know, who don't want to live in Silicon Valley anymore and they either buy or rent over here? How much do they even care about, you know, their fellow people that are struggling? I don't know. I don't have a good feel for that. Santa Cruz.
And yet you will be coming to this rally in a week?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I support it. And I mean, for me, like, it would be more effective if we were trying to set up night patrols, you know, that could be out there observing and taking pictures, you know. Well, it's just not convenient for people to do that at night. Well, then there's no committed activists here. Because night is when these things happen. So there must be some people who can stay up all night. I'm not able to do that, but, you know, who could, or take a shift for a couple of hours between 3 and 5, you know, twice a week, and go out there with a camera and patrol an area where there's RVs. And if we had a phone number, people could call and say, hey, somebody's banging on my RV or whatever it is. I mean, I just feel like there needs to be more creativity. Like, I remember people used to do a lot of filming the cops, and you did that, too. And I think, you know, maybe some racism was caught by cops in Santa Cruz by, you know, cop watch and stuff. But I think there needs to be, like, some kind of nighttime patrol, you know, people out there. That, you know, we could have a phone number. There could be a phone number that, you know, it's not hard to get a free phone number and publicize it, a Google Voice. And, you know, the thing is that whoever is in charge of the phone number, they need to be someone who's reliable and responsive. Now, so, you know, I don't know. I'd like to work with people who want to think about doing new kinds of things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me leave it there. And who knows, maybe some such people will show up at the rally or hear about it and talk to us afterward or come to the next meetings or hear this broadcast and get intrigued by this notion. Or so I guess for me, the issue has been essentially either interesting people who are getting gored by this ox, people in their RVs or who have friends in their RVs, or people who feel sort of an abstract conscience pull toward or outrage that this kind of thing is happening. Or maybe just sort of an absurd disbelief and sort of, you know, what the fuck, if you use a expression, is going on. But in any case,
I'm just not sure who lives in Santa Cruz City anymore, because the renters that are there are either over the hill all day making a lot of money, or they're barely making it and they're afraid to say it, make a peep.
That's a good point.
You know, and so who is the base? Who's the base to be built? There's not like a bunch of long-term renters here anymore. Sorry, those days are over. That's what I mean about a new analysis. There's not a bunch of long-term renters anywhere. There's fewer and fewer people that could even stay in their place for 5 years or more. Mm-hmm. Because the prices go up so fast that people are just being priced out every year, every other year, every year. You know, they get priced out. They have to move along. They're trying to get the richest crop of people in here that they can, and they're doing that all over California.
And I take it you might be making that point when you talk about this in a week at the rally, huh?
Yeah, but who are we talking to anymore? You know, is there like...
Each other,
you
know, it sounds like.
Finding the people, to organize... And that's the problem with the tenant organizing. Are you going to organize people who they're just biding their time until they can buy a house? Or, and then who are these YIMBY people? Are they people who just want to buy a house, but they just want to have a place that's cheaper so they can save their money to buy a house for a down payment? I mean, I don't understand, like, the new... reality of housing that's going on.
You do or you don't understand?
These YIMBY people.
Yes, in my backyard.
They want to build all market rate housing because they apparently make enough money to pay for market rate housing. So they're obviously not middle class people. They're obviously wealthy people because now the, middle class in Santa Cruz goes quite high. And low income goes very high because wages are low here. But these folks, they live elsewhere and commute. So their wage scale is other than what it is in this one of the poorest counties in the state. Their wage scale comes from one of the highest paid counties right next door. It's just really, it's kind of complex. And
I think it's good.
I
think you've articulated some of the complexities, and I hope you articulate more. Encourage you to get your own show and talk about it to our, who knows, minuscule audience.
Yeah, I'll be going like,
Between the ums and the ahs, I think there's something worth listening to, Cynthia. So that's what I've got today, and anything you want to conclude with?
Well, I think it's really great that people are willing to stand up in public and denounce when they're being targeted, even though they're just being a peaceful citizen of the community, not doing anything negative or illegal. And these people need to be supported. They need a group of people around them that can help them. People who worked on the rent control campaign are now being evicted. But you can't prove retaliatory eviction because the landlord has a right to evict you for no reason. So it's extremely difficult to prove retaliatory eviction. And so many people are being evicted right now because their landlords couldn't raise their rent during the rent freeze. But other people are being evicted specifically because they worked on the rent control campaign and their landlord has told them that. But they didn't write it, so you can't take that to court.
Do you have any sense of the numbers? I mean, are the individual cases of people you particularly know that this is happening to?
Well, I only know of one who has come out and said that.
Mm-hmm. But you think it's happening more widely?
Well, that's the one. That one is someone who worked on the campaign and was a spokesperson and their landlord told them that, you know, that
I think that I know somebody made that statement at City Council during the discussion, I believe, as well.
Right, right, and people don't necessarily call the hotline when they're being evicted. You don't know how many people are evicted. Mm-hmm. There's just not a good way to count that unless you make a concerted effort and somebody's paid and you collect the data.
But from what you've heard, you have a sense that there are numbers of people that this is happening to.
Yes, there are people whose rents were, you know, I had a lot of, I had probably 15 reports on my hotline of people whose rents were going to be, you know, raised immediately on December 12th, and other people who were given eviction notices before December 12th.
And we should say that December 11th was the date when the rent freeze and the just eviction ended.
Right, right. So that was the end of the rent freeze. And so people were receiving notices as the landlords were planning for the failure of Measure M. Mm-hmm. Even before Measure M failed, they were giving out notices because they figured it would fail, which they were right. But, here's something that's kind of interesting. I'll leave you with this. If anyone is listening who got an eviction notice before, who lives in the city of Santa Cruz, and is covered by the rent freeze, which it covered just about everybody for just cause eviction. So even if you didn't have rent control on your property, you were covered by just cause eviction. If you got a notice evicting you, like say in November or in October or even maybe in September, so that you were going to be evicted right after the end of the rent freeze, which was December 12th, that was not really legal for them to issue you an eviction notice during the rent freeze for no reason. If you got an eviction notice for no reason, for no legal reason under the rent freeze, which, you know, there were only certain reasons you could be evicted for under the rent freeze, under the just cause eviction ordinance part of the rent freeze. So if you got a notice, eviction notice, basically a notice to vacate is what it's called. It says, okay, you got to move out in 60 days or 30 days. Before December 11th, there are lawyers who would like to test that in court. So if you're willing to go to court, even if you've already moved, you can sue them for issuing you that notice if you still have it, the notice.
And
You contact Santa Cruz Tenants Hotline. Mm-hmm. That's my number, and I have access to those lawyers.
Give the number again, Cynthia.
It's 831-222-0359. 831-222-0359.
Well, I thank you for that.
Let me just be clear. Mm-hmm. This does not apply to rent raise notices. We believe that it was legal to issue those during the rent freeze because of how that ordinance was written. Mm-hmm. However, as long as it took effect after the rent freeze was over, we believe that a rent raise notice was
Rent raise notices are okay, but evictions are not if issued before that. All right, well, let's leave it there. And again, one last time, your number is?
831-222-0359. And you can find me online if you just Google Santa Cruz Tenants or Tenants Rights Santa Cruz. My website will come up, and it also has my email, santacruztenants@gmail.com.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you, Robert, for all your work.
Hey, you too.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Writing you this letter, cause among the choices, it's probably better than listening to voices raging in my head saying point and shoot. Then after you're dead, your face meets my boot. I don't know your name, it's better that way, cause I can't play this game, who knows what I'll say. I feel like I'm burning, I've had it up to here, it's time that you were learning the meaning of fear. I live in these apartments. apartments, they're your private property. Among your residents, most of us agree that you're a piece of shit. How does that make you feel? We don't like you one bit, that's for real. We think you're a thief, that you don't care. It seems your one belief is whatever the market will bear. Whatever you can get away with, well, you can make us pay. If we ever get justice, you should fear that day, landlord. But it's not just you, it's all your kin. The things you do cost the state we're in. You bribe the politicians so they'd let you off lead. Now the legal situation's just the one you need. For you to make millions, for profits to be high. Even billions won't be with you when you die. I hope you find the death you seek, meet the devil that you serve. If you live another week, that's more life than you deserve. Landlord. Landlord. In the class war you're waging, there's no question who is winning. But if there's any justice, this is only the beginning. The next act in the play will be written by the tenants. And until your dying day, you'll be paying penance. Your assets will be seized, that's a fucking given. You profiteers of misery, start spending time in prison. Then you can get a job, figure out what you do best. You can keep the house you live in, but we're taking all the rest. Landlord.
And that's David Robick's song, Letter to My Landlord, which I've played before on this show, but seems appropriate to play it again every now and then. It was put up on YouTube on January 22nd, 2016. That's, I guess, 3 years ago now. He writes, David Robick does, "My rent is almost double what it was when I first moved to Portland about 9 years ago. That's because Portland is the most popular city in the U.S. to move to, and the landlord is taking advantage of that fact by massively increasing the rent every year. Because he can. Because our democratic, capital D, state government is in bed with him and all the rest of his class, and these so-called, quote, progressive politicians don't give a shit about anyone who's not lining their pockets. Not because his cost of doing business has doubled. That's evil. On the day we received our most recent increase, I wrote this song," and you just heard that song, and you can find the lyrics online as well, though it's refreshingly easy or easier to hear Robick's lyrics than it is from some of the more, oh, I don't know, abrasive, tuneful, loud, or, well, other songs where I can't hear the lyrics, and I'm glad that I can hear Robick's lyrics. Robick also puts out a, I don't know, it's weekly or monthly letter podcast that I will be playing probably in future shows because I enjoy what he has to say, and he sometimes includes a tune. He has one about Santa Cruz, which I played before, about his experiences about the Loudon Nelson Center, and in fact, being told to leave the center because he'd been there for more than the 15 minutes allowed in the coffee shop area, even though he was scheduled to perform that night. Loudon Nelson Center is still holding this policy. Izeth Ray, who runs the Loudon Nelson Center, is continuing to enforce it, which says you can't use their bathrooms, which they lock with a kind of a code. You have to go get the code from the desk, which is constantly changing it, or at least regularly changing it every day. So I've been told, or was told some months ago. And you have to be a member of an event that's happening, not a member of the public, as that was always the case, in order to use the facilities. I believe one of our Conscience in Action members, Nick Whitehead, went over to Izeth Ray and talked to her yesterday and confronted her on this issue. She initially said she didn't have to talk to him at all because we had previously talked to Carol Skurich, who was the head of the Parks and Rec Department for a while. It's now been taken over by Tony Elliott. Parks and Rec runs the Loudon Nelson Center. And so is one of the superiors of Izeth Ray. But when Nutcracker Nick became, as he told us, more particular and specific about how we at Conscience in Action were
concerned about, you know, bringing this issue forcefully to public view, whatever means we needed to do that with. She finally agreed to meet with him in a more formalized meeting. Nick is ever a diplomat. He wants to work things out by conversations if possible. He and I have sometimes been at odds in Huff meetings, or I should say in conscience and action meetings, because I believe there's no talking to these people unless you have some power base to operate from. And the power base comes from protests, direct actions, sometimes civil disobedience, sometimes just community education. But you need to have that first before you, as I would put it, waste your time talking to people who are not going to pay attention to you anyway. And Loudon Nelson is no exception to this so far anyway. In spite of our conversations with city manager Martine Bernal this summer, with Tony Elliott, the new Parks and Rec director this fall, well, with Izeth Ray occasionally by some of our members, one of whom actually presented a letter of medical disability that she needed to use the bathroom with and was still told that they would not change their policy. And she's encouraged people, by the way, to go get letters of medical disability and present them so that you document the fact that they're turning away people, perhaps violating the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. It's not clear, again. We need more legal assistance here and more legal clarity. But in terms of just the outrageousness of what Izeth Ray and other bureaucrats are doing around this, and the lack of 24-hour bathrooms in the Santa Cruz community, and I'm not referring to the dark, disabled, inaccessible porta-potties, which are sometimes open and sometimes not, that you can find three of them in the city of Santa Cruz. That's not what I'm referencing here. We need the bathrooms that are already there, the brick-and-mortar bathrooms in San Lorenzo, and the parking structures open at night. Yes, open at night. Anyway, here's a little something from a guy who lives in an RV that's on YouTube who describes, apparently, kind of, I get the impression that this is sort of along the lines of, it ain't so easy to be in an RV.
So you don't miss anything. Click the bell notification.
I got a comment the other day, and I get these comments a lot, and I just don't know what to do about these kind of comments. Folks, try to compare living in an RV to living in a stick and brick. For some reason, they have convinced themselves that living in an RV is so much easier than living in a stick and brick. But it seems like every time I make a video where I talk about the difficult, people who are honest people with honest questions really struggle with the idea that there's any difficulties with it. And I really struggle with the idea that there are people who have convinced themselves that they're going to come out here and have a great time and everything's going to be perfect. And it worries me, because what if these folks sell their homes? In order to do this, I've talked about having an emergency fund and being debt-free. Well, to a lot of people, that means selling their home. And if you sell your home, then you have an emergency fund, debt-free, but you won't ever have enough money to actually go buy another house if this doesn't work. So the other day, someone suggested to me that I never show you the difficulties of this lifestyle. Boy, I think, man, what more can I possibly do to show you the difficulties of this lifestyle? I show these things all the time. I show them in the video clips, inside my videos, all the time. I show you generators and water collection and water filtration, but for some reason, apparently that's not enough. So this particular fella said, he wanted me to show him how difficult this lifestyle is, because I really don't show it. And that's all I ever talk about, is how difficult it is. And then he said, so now I'm going to go out and actually cut the grass and trim the hedges and fix the water sprinkler, and, you know, listed off several other things that's very difficult about the house. But what he failed to mention, and this is where it's key, is that when he's finished with all those chores, he's going to go into an air-conditioned house or a heated house. He's going to sit down in front of his, you know, TV and have cable TV, or he's going to go down in his woodworking area, his garage, and work on his hobby. So there's a lot of things that when you walk into the house, all of a sudden all these conveniences open up for you that you don't have out here. If you want to go take a shower, you open up the shower curtain, you get into the tub with the water running, the hot and the cold water running, and the water comes down on you. Very convenient, very easy. That's where this lifestyle takes a turn from the stick and brick lifestyle. Yes, I don't have to mow grass. You're absolutely right. But when I want to go into my house, I have to make my own electric. You don't have to make your own electric. Of course, you pay for it, but I pay for mine too. So let's just assume that the cost equivalence is about the same. But when I come home, I have to start the generator. It has to charge a battery. I have to monitor that charge. I have to make sure that when it's done charging, I shut off the generator. That I convert everything back off the generator onto the inverter, to the battery. So there's a whole sequence of things just to have electric. So I can power my refrigerator. This is vitally important when it's 30 degrees outside or 14 degrees outside. But you get out of bed and you walk outside into 14 degrees to turn on your generator. And it may take you 5 or 10 minutes to get it started because it's cold and it doesn't want to start. It's cranky. So when you get up in a stick and brick, you go into the living room, you flip on the light, you sit down, you maybe pour out your cup of coffee. I don't know what you do, but much more convenient. The lifestyle in the house is much more convenient than the lifestyle actually living in the RV is. When you go to the bathroom, you use the toilet, you flush the toilet, and it's all taken away from you, and you don't have to ever worry about it again. Again, let's assume the cost is relatively the same. Now, when you're in your RV, if you live in an RV where you have an actual toilet, where you can flush the toilet when you go to the bathroom, you're going to still have to go to a dump station and handle that waste. It's just part of the deal. Your tanks get full, you handle the waste. Or if you go to a paid campsite, you're still going to have to deal with that hose and that waste and the nastiness. You're going to have to wear gloves. And a stick and brick, never have to worry about it again after you flush the toilet. Living in a stick and brick, I bet you've never, ever, ever had to find where you're going to move your house to. There might be some out there who says, I've moved my mobile home or something, and that's fine. But I'm saying regularly, not a lot of people have picked up their house every 2 weeks and moved it to a new location. Here you will have to do that, which is actually kind of not simple, especially if you do it the way I do it, and I try to stay in an area for a season at a time, so I don't have a lot of travel costs. You're constantly looking and researching and trying to figure out resources, which would be water, stores, roads, and then you try to bundle all this up so there's several campgrounds in an area so you can bounce from one to the other if you're going to stay in an area for a season. But even if you're not, you still have to hook up your camper and get ready to move. This is something that you don't have to do in your house. You come home every day, same location, nothing changes. It's very easy. But in a campground, there are rules. You have to follow these rules. So if you wanted to go outside and barbecue, for example, after 10 o'clock with your radio playing or your generator running, then you're not going to be able to do that. And this is really key. If you don't have a battery system, where if you're going to boondock, you know, and you want to run your generator after 10 o'clock, there are a lot of campgrounds that don't allow you to do that. So that means the ranger comes out. Now, how many times has a police officer come to your house just to check on your status? Just to make sure you're okay. Make sure that you are legal. I would say probably not often, unless, of course, you've done something wrong. But if you're not done anything wrong, you're following all the rules, you know you're obeying the law, ranger comes over to your house at 8 o'clock in the morning and knocks on your door, scaring the heck out of you because they're always loud. I don't know why they got to beat on your door so hard like you're in a very large house. But they do, boy. I mean, they just rap on that door and they say, ranger! And so then you go to the door and you say, hi. He says, yeah, I just checking to make sure, you know, I ran your license plate and I need your driver's license and whatever. Just so we know you're here and everything's up and up, you know, whatever. And this actually happened to me quite a few times. It's happened to me several times in Mississippi. Happened to me in Florida. It's not that I'm trying to make a comparison between stick and brick and RV living. What I'm really trying to do is to get you to understand that RV living isn't as simple as a lot of people seem to think it is because they don't have to cut grass anymore. No, you don't have to cut grass anymore, but you do have to make your own electric. Thanks for watching. Like, if you like video, and happy travels.
And that's Van Life Nomad, if you want to check him out. And the name of that video is Living in an RV on YouTube. And to round off this edition of Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadsides, here's some interviews from last Saturday's Food Not Bombs meal.
So it's about 4:30 a.m. at the Food Not Bombs meal on December 29th, Saturday. I see a number of tents, at least three of them, on the sidewalk. And, of course, the pavilion where Food Not Bombs had it, man. Any street reports?
No. Everything's going good, man.
All right.
Everything's going good.
With?
Anonymous.
Anonymous. And what do you say about our friends at First Alarm?
They don't care what day it is, whether it's Christmas or not. They'll just wake you up in the middle of the night and tell you.
When did that happen to you last?
The rainy night right before Christmas.
And where were you?
Over by, at that place called Nourish.
Which is where?
It's a... I think that's Central and...
Is there a nearby store? So you were under an overhang or...
Yeah. They have a big awning on their entrance, like a porch. And there was another guy there, too.
And what? By what time of night was it?
It was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
And what happened?
The guy comes and says, got to move on now. And the other guy was there said, well, you know, we were just trying to be out of the rain. He said, well, it's not raining now, so.
Had the rain stop?
Yeah.
But I imagine it wasn't so dry out there.
No, and it was still misting, too, and then it rained some more, but I went over to the church after that.
And did you get bothered there?
No. The Greek church is pretty cool.
And how frequently does that happen to you?
That's happened twice already.
And about in a period of?
A week or so.
How's the daytime life for being outside?
It's pretty good, I guess. I sometimes go up to the Mission Plaza to rest or take a nap, but there's no toilets anywhere around there, so I have to come all the way back down to go to the garage parking lot just to use the toilet. But other than that, it's not bad, I guess.
How's the food?
Food today is pretty good here at Food Not Bombs.
Well, thank you, Anonymous. I appreciate the advice. I mean, the input. I mean, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Travis.
Yeah, Travis.
I found it an interesting experience, but they were giving these $5 Taco Bell cards away on Christmas Day. So for the next 2 days after that, I was going to Taco Bell to try to buy some Taco Bell. And for some reason, Taco Bell was not serving people that were pedestrian.
Only if you're in your car.
Only if you're
well,
in your car.
Just get a car there, man. Come on.
Exactly. Well, what if you have never owned a car or you're never allowed to have a driver's
you
license?
Lived if you haven't owned a car.
Well,
you
does
know
that mean you're not allowed to eat at Taco Bell?
Well, apparently, you know, there are some discriminations that have to be made.
Well, I walked up to an employee after standing at the drive-in for about 10 minutes looking at the menu, and I held my $5 card up to his face, and he opens up the window, and he's like, I'm sorry, we're only serving people that have vehicles right now. I'm like, well, what if I've never had a driver's license or a vehicle? And he said, that's not my problem. And he slammed the window in my face.
It's not my department.
Yep, slammed.
Now, your next task is to stop a car, you know.
And ask them if they want you.
No, demand that they let you into their car so you can get a damn bite to eat.
Yeah, that's what I was planning on doing, was waiting for the next drive around. But, you know, a day and 2 days after Christmas, there's not too many drive-thrus.
So you ended up with a hungry day after Christmas?
Yeah, just with a Taco Bell card. Later on that night, they did open up, but it was well after the period of 8 p.m. I found it very strange considering their sign said the front doors are open at 7 a.m. and they were never open for 2 days.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you, Eli.
I feel like I'm babbling a little much right now, so I think I should...
12:30.
You seem to be pretty babbling pretty concisely.
Yes, definitely.
Well, all right, Travis. I appreciate that. I will pass on the your attacks on our favorite Takoyako place to the world to tell them you're just obviously a malcontent with a bad stomach.
I wouldn't say it's... I would say it's definitely a famous place, but it's definitely also a very valuable survival tool for a lot of other people that hang around those areas.
Hear, hear. How are the people here at Food Now Bombs treating you? I see you're a hard worker, as usual, doing your stint here at the literature table.
I love it all the time. It's one of my favorite things I get to look forward to when I'm going to be spending a weekend. I'm not going to a party, and I'm not jumping in a pool with my boxers on. I'm planning on helping some other people rather than helping myself for the weekend.
When you're not skiing on the slopes of Colorado or skydiving, you tend to spend a little time at Food Now Bomb?
Yes, definitely. Instead of waking up late in my PD... I can't remember what they call those mattresses, but they're very special.
Indeed. And we've been talking with
Travis.
Thank you, Travis.
Good job.
We have a man with a ticket. What did you do wrong this time, ladies?
Well, I was just trying to get this ranger to do his job, you know. I was out by the back of the Palomar Arcade area, returning to the scene of the crime anyway.
You previously gotten tickets?
Yeah, just for other things.
Fighting them in court.
And there was a tractor trailer parked in the crosswalk. It had been a bone of mine to pick in general for a bunch of years, because I used to drive a truck and I never did bonehead shit like that, especially at a crosswalk in a really treacherous area. And Marini Santa Claus was in session, and there were people going back from Trader Joe's and back and forth with their kids, had to walk outside the crosswalk and were looking around the front of the truck, and the cars weren't seeing them, right? So I figured I'd go find a cop and ask him if the driver could move the damn thing, right? I go up front and this ranger's out there, and I go, hey, and I'd known this guy from a previous altercation.
A pleasant interaction?
Well, he was the only one that showed up in court, so they rubber stamped one of my tickets. That's going to go to appeal, but that's a whole other sidetrack. Anyway, I say, hey, you got a public safety hazard back there. There's this tractor trailer parked in the crosswalk, and people with their kids are walking inside and out of the intersection and almost getting hit by cars. He looks at me and turns around using my name and goes, you have a good day, Mr. blah blah, right? And turns and walks away. I go, hey, didn't you hear what I